Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher, and happy Valentine's Day.
We went golfing together the other day, and that was great. But now he's going back to the gym by himself, and I just feel like we're not making any progress.
Can you believe we've been married for 10 years?
I can.
Why are you saying it like that, though? It's been amazing to me. The ups and the downs.
Downs aren't amazing.
But the thing is, you learn from your downs.
Have you learned from yours?
Oops. That is an excerpt from Love and Marriage Huntsville, that reality TV show that's getting a lot of buzz these days when it comes to relationships. Melody and Martell going through the struggles of marriage. Well, tonight we're asking, how deep is your love on this Valentine's Day, for better or worse, in sickness and in health? Well, my guests are Stacey Jordan, co-host of The Husbands on WHUR.com, his wife of 15 years, Jaquetta, and Erica St. Bernard. She's a licensed clinical marriage and family therapist, and you. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Erica, thanks for joining me. Are you there?
I am here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Jaquetta, good to see you. First time on the program.
Thank you.
Stacey, you okay, man?
Oh, man, I'm nervous.
Okay.
Let me be real.
I know you're sitting on the other side of the table, my brother.
Far enough away where she can't kick me.
No, there's not going to be kicking. It is all love tonight.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about some serious stuff, though, when it comes to love and marriage. When your mate makes a mistake in this marriage, for example, whether the wife makes a mistake or the husband makes a mistake, how deep is your love to stand by them every step of the way, Jaquetta?
Okay.
How do you measure that?
Well, there have been times in the past that I could have handled situations or my emotions and how I felt if he did something that bothered me. But at the same time, I got to realize that I got to extend grace to him, you know, because honestly, there are areas that I could improve on as a wife towards him. And so I have to take that into consideration when we have those down times, per se.
Mm-hmm. How did you recover from the mistakes that you made? I mean, I love Stacey. He is such a good brother, and he has such a good sense of humor. But you know, same thing for you, because as she just suggested, obviously she's not perfect. But how do you continue to stand by her during the low points?
I think the thing that, you know, in low points, you remember. I remember high points and low points. Honestly, you know, you can get carried away with your feelings at a low point, or when somebody makes a decision that you don't like or hurts your feelings. You got to remember that, you know, this isn't the way it always is. It's not the way it's always been. And I know there are times where it seems down. I know that there will be high times. And in high times, I know that sometimes there'll be down times. I think you got to come to a place where you understand that that's a part of a growing relationship, and you got to be ready to have balance, you mm-hmm. know?
Do you have deal breakers?
Like I can say I don't have deal breakers, but I certainly.
What's
emotionally
your deal breaker?
I think I have deal breakers. I don't think I can handle my wife being involved with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people recover from affairs. Maybe it's because I'm a man. I don't think that I could recover from easily. It would literally take God's grace. And hey, God's grace could do it, but I'm just saying that for me, being a man, being human, ooh, that would be something that'd be really tough for me.
Mm-hmm. Jaquetta, your deal breaker? Look at she is. You should see her. She's just grinning and blushing.
I have that effect on her.
I know, like it's a first. It's like a first date.
It is, Harold.
Oh, it is. In a way, it is. First time on a radio.
So what's your deal breaker? If you have any.
By deal breaker, you mean like total walk away from the...
Yeah.
entire marriage? Wow. I don't know. I don't think I feel the same way Stacey does. I think that, I mean, I'm not saying.
Go do
this
what
is
I
the
do.
Past. Okay.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
I do think that I would be able to handle that situation a little more forgiving. I can't really say why that is. I don't know. I don't know if that's a difference between women and men. There mm-hmm. might be other women who feel like, girl, no. But right. I wouldn't say that an affair would be something that would cause me to totally walk away from it.
And it's hard with six children.
Yeah.
Six.
Six. All from me to her.
Yes, indeed. and you all have a unique, I would say, modern, very modern marriage in that you're a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, yeah. I like to say work from home so I don't feel as bad, right? Because, you know, I am working, but yeah, I spent the first, I spent the first year or so out in the corporate world. And then when we had our baby, she was small. My wife got an opportunity to get a job that actually paid more than mine. And
how
I,
about that?
I mm-hmm. was resolute that I wasn't going to have anybody else raising my kid. And so I didn't want to put her in daycare. And that's, you know, that's not to say anybody who does, you know, speaking down on them. But that was just my personal conviction. It was our personal conviction. And I said, you know what? If it's got to be me, then it'll be me. You know, mm-hmm. I'll be the one here taking care of it.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. It's a happy Valentine's Day conversation. How deep is your love? Give us a call if you have a comment or a question. Erica. Let us talk about modern marriages, modern love. Is the love as deep now as it was two or three generations ago? What's the difference?
It's a great question. I think it is the same, yet it's nuanced. Because years ago, decades ago even, the dynamic of marriage was very different. It was more from a support standpoint, right? Men tended to be the breadwinners, and so women tended to tend to the homes a bit more. And so now, because women have so much earning potential, sometimes we are exceeding our brothers in our ability to earn a salary, and sometimes that presents a challenge for the couple. Or other times, as this couple is suggesting for them, they've been able to make it work in a way that benefits them. And so I think that's one of the nuances to modern-day love that is a bit different from love.
Are deal breakers different today than perhaps they were generations ago, Erica?
I think so. I think before, then the idea of divorce was much more taboo decades ago than it is now. I think even at the premarital space, people are thinking in the back of their mind that if this doesn't work out, if I don't get my needs met, if I don't get what I want out of this, then that could be an exit. Whereas before, I think whether it was because of the security that marriage provided years ago or because of people's other convictions, whether it was spiritual convictions or otherwise, there was just a greater tendency to kind of stick it in and stick it out and just kind of stay. And so I think that now there's a mixed bag, so to speak, because there are some people who are definitely deep in the trenches of marriage and they're going to stay forever. And then there are others who are wading in the water and trying it out. And so divorce or separation seems like, you know, a safety net, if you will, if things don't go the way they want.
So I would imagine the next time anyone goes to a wedding for friends or relatives and you're sitting in the church or wherever it happens to be in the audience watching them, you know, go through the vows and everything, look closely to make sure that someone doesn't have their hands behind their backs with their fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm, basically.
Yeah, because I joke about that, but I think that things, you know, are different for a lot of people. Jaquetta, talk to me, though, about it's been 15 years for you guys. I mean, you guys are neck deep in marriage. This is not new.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen you here with Stacey before. Talk to me not just about the love part, but the friendship part, because you two are close. You seem very, very close to me. That's my observation.
Okay, so Stacey, it's funny that you asked that, because I think when we initially met each other, it was in college, and we honestly had times where we felt like we couldn't stand each other.
Mm-hmm.
When
That's true.
We were acquaintances or friends. And I guess it was by circumstance that we ultimately ended up being the last of our group of friends, still taking an additional semester at school, and we grew to actually learn and know each other on a more personal level because it was just the two of us there, and I got to see him for who he really was and gain an appreciation for who he was.
What does that mean, to see him for who he really was to you?
She thought I was a player.
I thought he was a jerk. And I'm sure he thought I was a jerk. I kind of was a bit sarcastic.
You and I knew, not thought, that you were a jerk.
But there were things about him that I saw that were really sweet, and coming from my family background and things, there was things that I saw in him that it was like, wow, I never experienced this growing up, or, you know, seeing other men act this way. And so it was sweet.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that friendship, Stacy, because, you know, obviously, you know, husband and wife, you all, with six kids, obviously you all have done quite a bit of hugging.
Yes, indeed. Yes. We're going to do some more, Harold. Thank you. Thank you for getting her to talk about how great I am.
That's right. But I think even, you know, beyond, you know, the romantic part, as I said, you two are really, I can see that there is a genuine friendship. Talk to me about that.
Well, she was my friend first, and I liked her because she was my friend. Even when we got together, if I gave you our true story, like like the way we hooked up, there was a certain way I didn't want to carry it because she was my friend. And I was like, I can't do this because this girl is my friend. I really like her. And for me right now, that's the thing above all that I want to preserve in our relationship. So as we go through all of these years, when you ask me about downtime, you know what I remember in downtime? That she's my friend. Mm-hmm. You know, that she, like, she may have said something that hurt my feelings, but she likes me, and I like her. You know, that's really the linchpin in our relationship is the friendship. And so, you know, that it's the bedrock. It's the bedrock of our marriage, our friendship is.
You can jump in, Erica. Your thoughts about friendship in a marriage, particularly when you need to move through the tough times.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love the idea when they said we were friends first. And I think that is a foundational piece for marriage that I stress and hope to drive home for premarital couples in particular, because that is exactly what the guy, what's your name again? I'm sorry, I should have paid attention.
Stacy and Jaquetta. Yes.
Yes. So what Stacy just said about the fact that I want to preserve this friendship. The friendship means more to me than anything, right? And so I think when we have that understanding at the outset before marriage, then when we are in a rough spat together, when we are fighting, when there are disagreements, when there are things that we just seem to be at an impasse about, I can look across the table and see that that's my friend. That's my partner in life. This is the person I've agreed to journey this journey with. And so that gives a different level of, as Jaquetta said earlier, an extension of grace that I acknowledge this is my friend first. And so I wouldn't want to see my friend out. And so I'm going to do what I can to make sure that we maintain that connection, mm-hmm. so that will allow us to build further.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're asking tonight, how deep is your love? How do you personally measure the depth of your love with your mate, your spouse, your partner? Lines are open. Give us a call, 202-319-7810. Renee, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Renee. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say, like, to make a long story short, me and my husband, we didn't know each other long when we got married. We knew each other less than a year. But one of the things that I had to learn, because I was a selfish woman, is not to love him for who I want him to be or who I think he should be. But I learned to love him for who he is. I'm a romantic. He's not a romantic. But what I found out is that he has a different way of showing love. And I had to accept that way of the way he was showing his love. There were things that he did. I just got to learn my man, basically. And in learning my man, what I found out is that the things that I always thought I wanted wasn't what I needed. And what he did is gave me things that I needed to grow. And we were like a yin-yang almost. And that's for now, we are 15, going on 15 years in April of marriage.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Renee, thank you and congratulations for sharing that with us. Erica, she really made an interesting point, and I guess she was talking about love languages and yeah. learning how he loves. How important is that in a marriage and or any relationship for that matter?
It's crucial. I talked to couples about the notion of love language, and that if I try to speak Spanish to somebody who speaks French, it doesn't matter how much I love that person. Unless they understand the language I'm speaking, or unless I'm understanding the language they're speaking to me, there's going to be tension. There's going to be conflict more than is necessary. And so it's important for us to get to know our partner's love language and to be intentional about loving them in their love language, not in our love language, right? Mm. If acts of service is my love language, I might wash cars and clean the dishes and those kinds of things. So those will be my expressions of love to my partner. Or that would be what I would want to receive from my partner. That's my love language. But if my partner's love language is quality time, him washing the car for me, I'm not going to feel satisfied in that. And so we have to be intentional. If your partner's love language is quality time, to be intentional to spend some quality time, not just time together in the house, but maybe together sitting on the sofa watching a movie or talking about a book or talking about a show that you're watching together or talking about a day, and not so much just in the quick and fast check-ins, but the real intentional time that we spend together. And so love languages are crucial, and they're definitely something that I advocate couples to be intentional about learning and then practicing throughout the duration of their relationship.
Interesting. I want to talk a little bit more about that in just a bit, and I also want to get your opinions on love languages, but I want to let our listeners know that we are going to be taking your phone calls about the depth of your love. What are your non-negotiables? What are your deal breakers? And how do you define or measure how deep is your love? Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. It is a Valentine's Day conversation. We are going to be taking your calls. Donna, calling from Fort Washington, you're just popped up on the line. We're going to talk to you in just a few seconds. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're asking, how deep is your love on this Valentine's Day? For better or for worse, in sickness and in health, how do you measure it? Do you have any deal breakers? Why do some people stand by their man or stand by their women or their woman no matter what? My guests are Stacey Jordan, co-host of The Husbands on WHUR.com, his wife of 15 years, Jaquetta, and Erica St. Bernard, licensed clinical marriage and family therapist. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Donna, calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling, Donna. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? I just want to tell the world how much I appreciate and love my husband.
Oh, okay. And how do you measure that? How long have you all been married?
We've been married ever since 2016, but we've been together for almost 10 years.
Wow. Okay.
And it's been a struggle, but I love him.
Yeah. Why has it been a struggle? Why do you say that?
If I had the time, I would tell you. It's been a struggle.
Right. So
I'm a strong individual, and I've been able to manage it.
So if it's been such a struggle, how do you balance the struggle with your love for him, which, based on this conversation already, sounds so intense? Why do you stay? Why do you stick it out?
He was worth it.
Wow. That's a powerful statement. Thank you. Thank you so much, Donna. That's a really powerful statement, Stacey. He was worth it. From a man's perspective, you, when somebody says, yeah, he's worth it.
I mean, that's really it. That if I were to hear that, or my wife tell somebody else that I'm worth it, you know, she was talking about love languages. For you to tell somebody else how much I mean to you, that's a big deal. And, you know, even when we, the other call, I forgot her name. I believe it wasn't Renee. Renee. Mm-hmm. The way she was talking about understanding her husband and finding out who he was, I personally don't hear it a lot that women, you know, I don't usually hear them speak that way, and my wife not included. Typically, you may hear complaints about, you know, what a man's not doing, what he is. As I listen to her say he was worth it, I understand what, you know, what I am, and I'm a tough person to deal with. The other caller saying my husband had a different love language. I had to figure out what that was. I mean, that's the essence of love. You know, that's the essence of friendship, becoming what you need to be in order to make it work for that person, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, what an expression to say he was worth it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you can top that for me personally.
You were nodding your head, Jaquetta.
Yes, I agree with everything that Renee was saying, because that was my own personal experience as we went through different things in our relationship, which is why I was saying earlier that I gained an appreciation for who he was, because it showed me, you know, areas where I needed to improve and for the better of our friendship and our marriage all together.
Erica, when you have counseled couples and they're really, really struggling, what is the thing that you find is most difficult for them? Those, you know, those deal breakers that they're trying to get through, mm-hmm. and they're really struggling with?
Generally speaking, it is infidelity, and we tend to think of infidelity only as sexual infidelity, but it can be emotional infidelity, where you have invested your heart, you've invested parts of you, parts of your day with someone else that is not your primary partner, right? And so there's this understanding or this thought that I was your main thing, I was the home base, and lo and behold, there's somebody else who's had access to you in ways that I have not. And so that tends to be one of the major challenges and hurdles for couples to overcome.
How do you fix that?
A lot of work. Helping couples to really restore trust, which is the hardest part of that work. As a clinician, I would say the hardest part is restoring trust, because couples do, you know, as a couple, you have a rhythm and you have a way about your life that seems to be altogether lovely and true. Of course, you have your glitches and your disagreements and those things, but when you find out that your partner has been spending time elsewhere or, you know, sharing their emotions elsewhere, it can be really hard to acknowledge or fathom that what we were experiencing was real or that it was true, because this other thing was happening simultaneously. And so while I thought we were building something great together, you were off building something else elsewhere. And so sometimes for couples, whether it's the man or the woman who is the betrayed partner, that tends to be the challenge, is trusting that what is happening now is real without negating what was before. And so that's the really mucky part of this transition and the process of moving forward, is navigating that space of how do we move forward? How can I trust you? How can I trust that you are where you say you are?
Usually, when people are considering getting married in this day and age, we often hear about, you know, premarital counseling. We often hear about whether that's faith-based or otherwise. And there are a myriad of conversations that you have when people start thinking about tying the knot. But Stacey and Jaquetta, in your case, you all started out a little differently.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I'll start with Jaquetta first. talk to me about what happened in college and how you all got together. I'll let her start.
Why, Harold, we just met.
That first date, there you go. I know.
Okay, so like I said, we started off as friends, and then once we got to know each other more, we didn't go about things
traditionally.
The traditional way. So the baby came before the nuptials.
Before the graduation.
Before the graduation from college, yes. So that was a bit of a challenge, I think, for both of us, because like Stacey said, it was always our intentions to not destroy our friendship or allow us to get involved in that way to, you know, cause us to be torn apart. And then we did do marital counseling at a certain point. But I think also what lends to us having such a great bond, aside from us being good friends, is the examples that our parents and their marriages
Definitely.
Were before us, and us getting into a relationship with each other and a marriage, understanding that we're in this pretty much until death do us part.
Was there ever a time after the baby came, but before you got married, that you said, either one of you said, nah, I'm not going to marry him or marry her there, and think about leaving?
You know, I was dead set on marrying her. I was dead set. And it took a conversation from my dad that helped me out.
What did he say?
My father said, son, don't try to make a situation that's bad better and make it worse. Basically, don't just marry her because she's pregnant. You don't want to do that. And I didn't have that conscious thought in my mind, but I think somewhere in there that was a bit of a motivation because I was trying to do it right. Mm-hmm. But when he said that, it freed me up to realize that I really did want to marry her. Mm-hmm. I took obligation off and said, I'm not obligated, but I don't want to be with anybody else. And so now,
baby or no baby,
I wanted it to be her. In fact, I had wished that we had done it the right way, because I didn't want her to question in her mind that I wanted her because of the baby.
And you know? I dealt with that. That was a challenge for me. In the back of my mind, it would come up from time to time. Like, is he just doing this because, you know?
But dude, we had long conversations. How can you love me? I do. I really do love you. It's not because you're pregnant. No, I don't believe you. You know, we went through those nights having those conversations. And, you know, I convinced her. And it was true. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, every time we had kids, people thought we were crazy. I like having babies with. I'm not just talking about the making part. It's the making part is awesome.
Right.
But I like having children with her. I like that that's our seed, you know. And it makes it easy for me to be at home for year after year, because, you know, I'd be like, okay, now that you're grown up, I can go back and get back to my career. But we'd have another one all the way up until 2011. We were having babies. Mm-hmm. And it would just push my career back more and more and more. Although I would try to work in between. I'm telling you, man, when you got four kids in diapers,
yeah,
that's a heavy load. And trying to work and do all that, it's a heavy load. Trying to have a business, a heavy load. So, you know, it really did cost me. You ask how deep my love is.
Right.
It costed me to have this family, but I wouldn't trade it.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes there are some things that you can't put a monetary value on. About the premarital counseling, Erica, have you had situations where a couple may have come in to talk to you, and then they realize that after the counseling that maybe they should not, or indeed did not, want to get married?
Yes, that has happened. I get excited when I get calls from couples who have not already scheduled venues and dates and sent out save the dates and booked all this, you know, vendors and all that. Because when you come to premarital counseling, it's designed to be the space where you sort out your differences and you get really clear about who you are as a partner and the partner is that you're wanting to partner with. And so if you come into the process already with this money paid out to all these vendors, and you feel, as Stacey mentioned, you feel obligated to follow through with this decision. But when you come into the process without those things in place, you tend to be a bit more open to hearing what you need to hear and seeing what you need to see. And so, yes, I've had probably realistically in the course of the time that I've worked with premarital couples, I've had two couples for sure who in the process, not even at the end, but in the process said, this is not going to work. Thank you so much for your time. This has been really helpful. We've decided we're not going to move forward.
What were the issues?
The issues were that there were differences of families of origin, as Stacey and Jaquetta mentioned. They didn't have marriage models, and many times we're trying to create a new thing, which is great. And I'm all for something new. And sometimes because we don't have a framework from which to build, we don't know what we're doing. And sometimes a partner may not be willing or able in some capacities to learn what they need to know to be the type of partner that is going to have a healthy marriage. So sometimes those are the challenges. Sometimes there are issues of mental and emotional health that people are not willing to, you know, continue with treatment or, you know, follow the directives of doctors and people who are, you know, assigned to take care of them. And so those kinds of things present a challenge. But in terms of the premarital counseling space, just helping, you know, helping couples to figure out what their expectations are, because that tends to be another major hurdle for couples, is we walk into a marriage with expectations based on what we saw growing up or based on what we did not see. And we're not always clear in our articulation of what we are expecting of our partner. And so when our partner does not deliver on an unspoken expectation, then we are resentful and bitter, and that breeds contempt.
I want to talk a little bit more about that, but Jaquetta is nodding her head. I'm going to let her speak on that. Go ahead, Jaquetta. I like having Jaquetta on this show. The show, it should be the husbands and Jaquetta.
It will be today.
No, but I was hoping that this conversation will get to the point of the expectation thing, because I do find that even with speaking to friends of mine that I have that are single, that are kind of shying away from wanting to get married, it seems that people have like these grandiose expectations for what marriage should be. And maybe social media or TV or whatever, you know, reality shows lend to that. And like she said, it's unspoken. And then when the person doesn't meet those expectations, and it's like, oh, you know, this isn't worth it. And people don't understand that marriage is something that you are continually learning and growing and working through. It's not after the ceremony, everything, you ride off into the sunset and everything is great. You continue to grow in it.
Interesting. I need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to ask you about the situation in Virginia. Not just the controversy, but Governor Northam is married, and so is Lieutenant Governor Fairfax. And I definitely want to hear from Erica and Jaquetta about the wives' perspective when their husbands are in crisis. That's coming up in just a bit. Stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation on this Valentine's Day. We're asking, how deep is your love, for better or for worse, in sickness, in health? Let's talk about, for better or better yet, worse. As I mentioned before the break, you have Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam accused of being a racist, at least when he was in college, because of these horrific racist pictures in his medical yearbook. And so now he is under immense pressure to give up his seat at what has become the top of his political career. The same thing with Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, accused of crimes of sexual assault and rape. Erica, I'll ask you first. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about standing by your man in this particular case, both Governor Northam's wife, we've seen her publicly. We have not seen the Lieutenant Governor's wife publicly, but from all indications, we've heard reports that the wives have been talking to each other and the like, and helping to support each other. Talk to me about that, because this is serious stuff.
Indeed, it is serious stuff. I think one of the challenges when you're on the outside looking in is that a woman or man standing by their partner, as you said before the break, when they're in a moment or space or season of crisis, looks very different when you're on the inside and you're looking in, right? We don't know what other battles these couples have had to traverse together. And so it seems like, yes, it would make sense from the outside to abandon ship and say, yeah, no, you've got this thing going on, this past stuff has surfaced, and I've got to step out. I can't be a part of this, and so I'm moving away from the marriage, or I make a public statement that, you know, states that I'm not supportive of my husband's past actions and so forth. But again, the choice or the decision in the moment to stay with a partner speaks to, for some people, the depth of their vows. They said for better or worse, and I don't know how much worse it can get when they dig up your past, and certainly when there are allegations of sexual assault and you know, and rape. That, I don't know that there's anything, that or maybe like child abuse or child pornography or something of that kind of space that would be worse if there is such a thing. But I do think the other thing too is better or worse is relative. What's, you know, what is a non-negotiable or deal breaker for one family or couple is not the same for another. And so I think that has to be factored in too as we weigh in on what people's decisions have been to stay or to leave.
What do you think, Jaquette? A political crisis where one husband is accused of racism in his past, or a husband that, who is accused, only accused, of a sex crime. How do you work that in your mind when you're looking at the love that you feel for your husband?
Like she said, I think that, you know, we have to be careful when you're outside of a situation looking into it and coming from more so of a judging thing, like, oh, no, you need to leave. Because when you're in a marriage with someone, you grow to know them in a way that other people don't. I mean, of course, there are times when people, I mean, you could be in a situation where you don't know the person, but you know, that those are things that come up with marriage. Every situation isn't perfect. And in some instances, the wives may have previously known about these events when they happen. And so for this to now surface, again, you know, you got to understand that they're dealing with whatever emotions or feelings they experienced when they first learned of it, if they knew of it before. And it might be something that they had worked out between themselves before. So,
before it became public.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. So I would tread lightly on, you know, voicing such a strong opinion about what a wife or a spouse should do in those situations.
That was
good. I got to admit, that was good.
Give me some. Yeah, I like that. Now, if the shoe were on the other foot, Stacey, where, you know, your wife, you know, on the job was accused of doing something horrific, and after you did the head spinning, I don't believe it or what have you, you know, what is the thing that determines your stick-to-itiveness?
I think that because I know my own capacity as a human being, you know, emotionally, I would probably want to check out. Emotionally, I would. Mm-hmm. Just being honest, like, certain things, my wife, she has a certain, there's an idea that I have of her in my mind, right? Okay. And in my mind, she would never do that, right? But a lot of people think that. But what if she did? It would challenge me. It would rock me to my core, you know, because she's so much a part of my core. It would rock me to my core. But I think I'd have to realize that I'm a human being, and given certain circumstances and maybe certain checks and balances go away, if she did something on her job, I would have to extend her the grace, be merciful to the extent that I'm human just the same, you know. Would it be easy? No. Not for me, not at all. No. I think my wife is a better man than me. And that, not a man, baby, not a man. You know what I mean,
but
baby.
I get
you
that,
know what I mean.
That is profound. That is a really profound statement. Indeed it is. Now
speak to Harold.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Though, the difference between, you know, Stacey mentioned earlier that would be a deal breaker for him, right? This notion of infidelity. I know we've kind of moved away from that, but this idea that men and women are or tend to be very different in how we handle and process matters of the heart. I think culturally, women have been trained and taught to, you know, take one for the team and just, you know, love harder and be present and do your best to maintain relationships. I think we're groomed to be relational. And so when our relationships fail or are seen to be failing by other people, that is a negative reflection on us. And I don't know that men have that same perception or persona to maintain. And I think the challenge, as Stacey was mentioning, if his wife were to cheat, like, he doesn't know if he could rebound and recover from that, if they could rebuild from that. And that is a very common theme in couples therapy when the husband is the partner who has been betrayed by his wife. Many times those marriages do not continue forward because the man has a much harder time forgiving and being able to regain trust and move forward. I think it shatters parts of their ego in a way that it breaks the woman's heart to a similar space. But I do think because of how we're wired so differently, there are different assaults and attacks that happen at the core, as he said, that happen for us as women in different spaces or at different times.
So we've gone from we've dealt with better or for worse. Now, sickness and in health, we all have heard the situation about B. Smith, her husband and his girlfriend and her living in their house. B. Smith has a severe form of dementia. I'll start with you, Erica, because often sickness is relative. Mm-hmm. And when you lose a part of someone who is still living, it, there's just been so much discussion about that. Your thoughts on that particular matter from a counselor's point of view?
I watched an interview yesterday with Dan, who was B. Smith's husband. He was on The View, I believe, was the show, and the women there were interviewing him, and he spoke about, thankfully, having the opportunity to share his own side. And so he talked about, he said at some point he and B had a conversation while she was lucid, you know, still not so far progressed in the disease, and she said to him that she wanted him to live his life. And so she didn't give specifics and details, certainly probably not to say bring a girlfriend into the house that we shared together. But in essence, she told him that she wanted him to live his life. And so she did not want him to stop living. And I think one of the things that he said in the interview that was interesting to me is he said, I could have chosen to place her in a home, but I kept her in our home. He said, and what I actually did was I bought a new home that had a gated space because she would, you know, not run away, but she would leave the home and be missing for hours at a time and be with random people in random spaces as the disease was progressing. And so while people would attack him for the decision to have what many would call an affair and even a live-in affair partner, right, this idea that he has chosen, although in a different way, to honor his vow of in sickness and in health, he's choosing to live in the same house with his wife who is ailing and who is no longer herself. He said that she is, you know, physically in amazing health and looks beautiful. He said she can still wear a two-piece bikini. He said, but her mind is that of a toddler. And so to watch, we don't know what that's like, right? We're outside, we're looking in, and we're making judgments and assumptions about what should be and what should not be. And I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I think each family has to do what works for them. And while many people have the argument that B is not in a space where she can make, you know, give some sort of consent, so to speak, because she's not fully aware of what's taking place. But I do think it's important to consider that the ways that we honor our vows in terms of sickness and in health will look very different. As you said, health is relative. And so what looks like, you know, helping your partner in one season may look very different as they age and as, you know, as things happen and change over time.
Could you do it, Stacey?
You mean bring another woman in the house?
While your wife, and certainly I don't even like the thought of bringing up, you know, the possibility of something like that happening.
No, I feel you. I understand.
Yeah, but
I might be scared that she may come back, like in the middle, like yeah. We just doing our thing, and then she come back, and you know, yeah, she's nice, but when she get mean, she get mean, you know. Mm-hmm. But no, I think honestly, I think, and again, I got to go back to my wife's point, what she made about we got to be careful about making judgments mm-hmm. about what people do in their house, and the same with the good doctor here. We were having a conversation. We were saying to each other, we don't know what she said. This is my first time hearing that they had a conversation, live your life. And mm-hmm. If you don't know that and you're making these judgments, you know, you can see, if you've seen the video or read the article, that she is like a toddler in the house and she's not present. And listen, with my own personal morals and conviction, let me speak for my morals. I'd have a hard time with that. But as a person, I can't fault the man in the way some people are viciously attacking him, because I don't know, you know, as mm-hmm. such a debilitating, mentally debilitating disease. I don't know what's that like him for emotionally, you know. I don't know.
Jaquetta, I'll let you have the last word on this one.
I agree. And additional point that I would like to add is that, you know, people have a lot to say about Dan and the decision that he's made. But like she said in the interview, he indicated that his wife said to live his life. Another thing is, I think that people would have an issue if, and I shared this with Stacey, if he left or divorced her or put her in a home, you know, people will have a problem and will have something to say. Oh, that's messed up. He did that while his wife was, you know, decreasing in her health. You know, how could he just leave her like that? So
I think the thing that a lot of people have a problem with is that she's in the girlfriend is in the house.
Yeah.
And they may be more lenient if she did not live in the house. Mm. But again, who am I?
I don't know.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, I want to thank, you know, all of you for coming in and talking about this. Erica St. Bernard, thank you so much. Your expertise has been invaluable. Stacey, always good to talk to you, man. Jaquetta, I am so glad that you have been a part of this program.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
You are a lucky man, Stacey. Yes, you are.
Indeed, I am.
You know, y'all just go home and go to sleep with all those kids.
Yeah, we gonna hug first. And then
get out of here. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. For this Thursday, February 14th, I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night and happy Valentine's Day, everyone.